Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice Speaker, Dean Wilkerson and your staff of ASEP, my fellow counselors and colleagues, family and friends. It's been really quite a very interesting year. It's been a great honor for you to give me the responsibility and the opportunities as your president. What I'm going to go through is to show you how busy a year it's been and how we've actually are starting to accomplish the exact things that Dr. Stack was just mentioning. We are the MacGyvers, we're the innovators, we find solutions to problems, and I'm going to have some announcements today you haven't heard about yet to show just how advanced and how successful we are and we're going to be in the future. I know I'm an optimist, I'm known as such, but I think when you hear what's going on, I think you're going to agree with me when you leave here this evening. We have a great mission, supporting the highest quality emergency care for our patients and supporting our specialty and our physicians. It's a great role. It's a great job we do as counselors and as officers at the college. We all know this slide. Todd Taylor created this years ago, and not much has changed. If you work your way around that wheel, we've got a lot of work to do, don't we? But I could tell you, having worked with over 115 ASEP staff, 675 committee members, 10,000 section members, that we're addressing all of these problems in our way. And we're not accepting there's no solution for them. We just aren't. And wait till you see some of the exciting things coming down the pike. One of the first things I told you last year was I'm very concerned about expense, especially at the end of life. If you look at this 30% of total cost for 1% of the population, a lot of that is the elderly. And we know, if you look at this graph, the blue are elderly patients in the United States and how much we spend per capita, far much more than the rest of the world. And you know one of the reasons. We're stuck with those uncomfortable conversations for the person who really needs to pass on to the next life or die and not go through any more suffering. Those conversations don't take place in the doctor's office. They don't take place at the dinner table. They don't take place at their church or wherever. And what we've done is we had an end-of-life initiative to take a look at how can we advance our society to change so that when people do come to that point in their life for that transition, that they're ready. And it's not something we fear, but something we can celebrate for all we've accomplished. So we convened a task force. Vidor Friedman and Mark Rosenberg did a great job. And they looked through all the resources that the college has, and it was substantive. We have a palliative care section, a geriatric section. Congratulations on setting that up, because the timing was perfect. Because we went through our archives. We had hundreds of pages of resources for our members. And so that task force put together a compilation of all the different things available to you as members to help advance this conversation. And in addition, we've been helped this year by CMS. Remember, the federal government's here to help you, right? In this case, they may. There's a proposed code for primary care physicians to spend time with their patients talking about end-of-life issues far before they get to their deathbed. And I hope to goodness sake they pass that. It's so that they have that conversation, and then the patients walk out of there and they say, geez, I need to find an elder law attorney or talk with my family to help me so no one's burdened at that terrible time of life. I also told you last year that we have to own sepsis. We are the greatest diagnosticians in the world. It's incumbent upon us to recognize sepsis as soon as possible and initiate treatment. So we convened an ASEP expert panel on sepsis led by Don Ely. And just like most of the committees or all the committees and sections, we have some really smart people. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I know where to find smart people. And that's in this room and our membership. And they've already delivered an incredible product. You may have heard about this, DART. This is a web-based tool, which will be also available on an app soon enough, where you could punch in things like lactate level or fluid resuscitation. It will give you reminders. As you can see that, you just unscrolls and it says, look, a repeat lactate level is an important thing to consider and perhaps measure. The timing of this couldn't be better, because this fall, CMS is launching more quality measures regard to sepsis that your hospitals are going to be responsible for, and you're where they're going to go and say, can you help us with this? So you're going to have these tools created by this expert panel at your fingertips as of today, or actually this week. I also told you that psychiatric boarding and the treatment of psychiatric patients or behavioral health patients is inhumane in our country as it exists right now. It's just abhorrent the way people have to wait for days to be placed wait for hours and days to be seen by a behavioral health specialist, lack of parity in payment systems, the stigma associated with behavioral health. It's just not who we really believe we are as physicians. So when I walked out of here last year, one of the first things I asked staff to help me with is to convene a summit. And we invited many organizations. We met in D.C. before the holiday, believe it or not, we were able to convene a group of people from many organizations because they also thought that this issue was so important, they were willing to give up some holiday time and that busy period to come in and meet in D.C. And we all agreed. The treatment's inadequate. The number of specialists to help out is inadequate. The boarding problem is unacceptable. Patients are in crisis, and people who are in behavioral health crisis, because we have patients represented there, are actually in pain. And they told us stories that would make you really frighten you and make you even more galvanized to solve this problem. Have we solved the problem yet? No, but we have this coalition we put together. We have a press release that's ready to go. Laura Gore and our DC staff are great. It's going to be released probably after this week. It's saying we have a coalition together, we agree on the problems and where the roads to the solutions to help make sure these psych patients are treated in the right place at the right time and not boarded in our emergency departments for days on end. The other groups that we're involved with are ENA, thank you, Kathy, the future president's here in the room, I hope, NAMI, the National Association of Mental Health Illness. These are patients, and their stories are very compelling. That group in the middle, the American Association of Emergency Psychiatry. How many have ever heard of that group? Several of you. You could belong, by the way. You don't have to be a psychiatrist. But they're like us. They work shifts. They work crazy hours. They're committed to their passion, taking care of behavioral health emergencies. And they have a little bit of ADD. And they're like us. And they're really a core part of that coalition. They're going to be, so just stay tuned for this. Your president-elect, Jay Kaplan, is going to allow me to stay involved with that steering committee and work with Sandy Schneider and other people so we can make sure that this initiative continues to grow. You know, we're not the only ones concerned about psychiatric emergencies and mental health. Inside the Beltway, there's a lot of attention. There's actually three bills circulating through committees, at least three. There's more than that, but we're focused on basically three. And the one we're really looking at is the one by Senator Bill Cassidy and Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. And you have to thank Peter Jacoby for educating Chris Murphy on all these issues, because we had a teleform the other day, and he could have been more forthcoming and seemed to really get and understand our issues in that regard. The picture on the upper left is with Senator Bill Cassidy. We had a fly-in with Lynn Shearer, the president of SEMPA, Matt Powers, the president of ENA, and we went into these offices together, arm in arm. As Senator Cassidy said, geez, you have the whole team here. And that's, you're going to see more of that model for ASAP, is we're going to go into these offices as collaborators and coalitions and let them know we're not only serious, we're the leaders, but we have other friends behind us. We have not forgotten about tort reform. Just so you know, House Bill 836 has been resubmitted. Alex Rosenau's congressman has resubmitted this, and this will give you federal protections, like the Federal Tort Protection Act, like a federal employee, like a Veterans Administration physician or a military physician. It gives you access to the higher level of courts, higher levels of evidence when they brought suits against you. This is getting traction. People say, geez, it seems to make sense, and hopefully maybe a logjam will break in Congress. But it happened with the SGR. Maybe it'll happen for this. We're just going to cross our fingers and keep pushing it. All right, now let's get into the Affordable Care Act. We're living through the transitions of a rapid and really profound change in our healthcare system. As we know, it's constitutional, it's not going away, but how are we going to be dealing with this? Dennis Beck had this slide from the VBEC task force from years ago. You see Murray's manure, it's going to meet the fan here, okay? We feel a little bit of the pain. You just heard about ICD-10 and these type of things occur. But emergency medicine, emergency physicians, we don't take no for an answer. We're going to find solutions to these problems. I'm going to take you through a couple of different problems we're dealing with the ACA and how we as a college are addressing them. All right, first of all, as far as we're concerned, healthcare isn't a privilege. Because of our EMTALA mandate, it's a right. We take care of everybody. We wear a white hat. We sleep well at night. And we're very proud of what we do because it is a right. So we don't even consider it a privilege. I don't know why people even discuss it anymore. But what do we do in a free enterprise system? That's where the conflict occurs. We know this. Jim Augustine and the ED Benchmarking Project is projecting 150 million visits for this year, 2015. This is unofficial data. Don't go publish this, but the people, our patients, continue to speak with their feet. They're doing everything. The insurance companies have an ED diversion project. I wish they could solve our diversion project in a different sense, but they're trying to create ED diversion. It's not working. Like I've told you before, our patients in small groups and focus groups, they like us. They like you. You're a problem solver. They know if they come to your emergency department, you're going to get them on the right path to diagnosis or recovery before anybody else in a much quicker period of time. And so they're going to keep coming. They're also going to keep coming, and it's going to have to be reimbursed amount because of the prudent layperson, which is typed in that small type down here. Don't read it, but you know it. That if anyone has a life or limb-threatening condition, or they suspect so, they're supposed to be cut as a covered benefit with the ACA. We've all seen this slide, too, from the advisory board. If ever we were at the center of the hub, even more so as we move ahead. And I'm going to tell you how we're going to leverage that role with some neat projects that are underway. We do have to show our value. We take reports like the RAND report, and we show our red box there in the middle of all this admission process and disposition process. We know that we control with our pens or our fingertips and a keyboard the most expensive decision. That's admission or discharge, or now coordination of care and transitions in that inpatient to outpatient environment. We had SGR repeal this year. We had MACRA, and we had the MIPS, the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System. And what does that mean? It's too complicated to go through in my short 15 minutes here. Just look, though, that on the far right, how much money is going to be at risk or gained for quality reporting if you use merit-based incentive payment systems or if you use advanced alternative payment models. Your college is all over both of those tracks to make sure that you're prepared to benefit as you best can as we go into that new era, that new environment. And the biggest thing that's really happened the last year in that regard, regarding MIPS, it was almost prescient, but we saw that they were taking away our PQRS measures. We create our own registry, the Clinical Emergency Department Registry. On the most accelerated timeline of any project I've seen in the college in my 25 years as a member was the RFP out for software writers to create a registry for our members that could pull data passively. So you don't have to, it makes your life easier to show that you deliver great quality care with great value. We are going into the era. Remember Hal? 2001. We're here. Listen, we are trying to create systems that data is going to capture what you do. Because the more data we capture of what we do on a daily basis, it's going to help us show our value. I'm not going to go into too much detail on Cedar. Please stop by the booth, because there's a ton of information to learn about this, but it's the first emergency medicine specialty-wide registry that's been created. We've got over 2,800 physicians already enrolled in the beta testing phase, and we will be reporting data for 2015. In 2016, I see possibly 15,000 to 20,000 physicians possibly in that registry. In order to manage such a huge initiative, we have to create a new committee. We usually try not to increase staff or increase committees, but this was so unique a project, we had to create a committee that's led by Steve Epstein and staffed by Stacy Jones. Incredibly brilliant people and competent. And we have five different subcommittees for data integrity and MOC development. By the way, ABEM, thank you very much for helping us invest in this project, Dr. Heller and your team back there. So this is all very important, all tied in to make your life easier, to tie in quality measures and your MOC, et cetera. The new news that you may not be aware is that we had 18 approved measures by CMS as of 5 months ago. Yesterday, your board approved nine more measures, six of them involving sepsis. The timing is interesting, isn't it? You know that there's going to be some sepsis quality measures coming down at your hospitals. You're going to be equipped now because our TEP, our technical expert panel, has done a ton of work to find measures that are meaningful and actually measurable and could impact outcomes on treating a sepsis patients. So I told you we'd own sepsis. This is another way that we're going to be owning sepsis because we're going to have our own six measures just dedicated to sepsis alone. You may not have heard this news. This is why I'm so proud to have been your president this year. We received a $3 million grant from CMS, from the Center of Medical Innovation, to look at transforming clinical practice. And I put the names of the responsible people, and I'm sure I left people out. I know Rick Murray helped on this and a lot of other people. But Arjun Venkatesh and Jay Shur, with Stacey Jones and Cynthia Singh, did one heck of a job to land this huge grant. Out of 36 successful grantees, only 7 or 8 are professional societies. So you should be very proud of your college. Cynthia, Stacey, Jay, you deserve a round of applause. And what they're going to look at, by the way, are things like using the Choosing Wisely initiatives that we have 10 measures, how to use those, and how to better manage chest pain more efficiently in the transitions of care. That gives you an example of the type of things Transforming Clinical Practice Initiative will work. Here's some more exciting news. We just had an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, lifted to help create a visit registry modeled after the Washington Registry, ED, Emergency Department Information Exchange. What this exchange will do will allow a patient to be tracked in the large registry. So if they come into another emergency department, you can find things that are listed there, such as their previous imaging studies. You can find their pulse form. You can find advanced directive. You may be able to find if they're being monitored in a PMP program. The beauty of the ED model that Washington State has, which we're going to try to incorporate into this National Emergency Visit Reporting System, is it's going to push it to you, to your desktop. You don't have to call a number, log in with a, you know, use a login, and it's cumbersome PMP programs. This can circumvent that. Not only that, it will start tracking real-time data of how our patients use our services, and it's going to give a much more accurate picture of what we deliver every day in our emergency departments and what our patients are needing and requesting of us. Okay, so Teddy Roosevelt once said, you know, far and away, the best prize that life has to offer is the chance to work hard at work worth doing. And I'm telling you that although we wear the white hat and we believe in EMTALA and we don't do wallet biopsies, our mission is eroded by unfair reimbursement. And ever since I got on the board, I started working with the reimbursement committee and Dave McKenzie and his team. We were hammering, trying to find ways to be treated more fairly. And I want to give you an update on 2 projects. AMA RVS Update Committee. This is where people get in that room you've read about in the paper, that dark cloak, you know, smoke cloak room, where the different specialties fight about what their values are to each other. Well, I'm going to step up into the alternate chair delegate when I'm done as your president, and Jen Weiler, to your right there, and Mike Bishop are our RUC reps. Mike has been promoted to vice chair of the RUC, another huge milestone for our specialty. And the way this works, they're all smiles here, but that's a room of 28 people representing their specialties, and they're going to fight to the death to maintain the highest values they can for their specialty. Who wants to mess with this guy? That's his game face. Dave McKenzie, he's been staffing the RUC for over a decade and a half. There's 400 people in the room. There's 28 RUC reps. There's all the support staff behind him, like the coaches on the sideline. It's really an important thing. And here's Ethan Booker. Mild-mannered-looking Ethan Booker. Those people are at the end of the table, in a U-shaped table, 28 people around the RUC, fighting for a code that I can't discuss because of a non-disclosure agreement, confidentiality agreement, I mean. However, he was one of 2 people out of 13 at that end of that table fighting for an increase for something we do every day. 13 people fighting against us. We prevailed. And I can't tell you what happened, but this team, that RUC team, is spectacular. And I am telling you today about the... We are held in esteem, actually, at the RUC. My first visit there, it was very encouraging to see how well received. Now, and the RUC survey says, some of you in this room are randomly going to be selected as other members in the college to fill out a survey about intubation. The way the process works is you're going to fill out a survey saying how long it takes you to prep to do an intubation, how long it takes you to actually slip the tube in, how long it takes you to find the glide scope, how long it takes you to secure the tube and make sure it's in the right place. That's work. And that's what the RUC does, how much work is involved. And what we do is David and his team are going to take that survey data, and we're going to go to the RUC, and we're going to argue the case that we need an adjustment in the relative value scale. Understand how that works? Talk to me offline. Very important. If you get the RUC survey from intubation, please answer it, because we need a minimum number if we're going to have a valid survey. All right, hard work. Outer network, balance billing, narrow networks, greater of 3. Fights that we're fighting since 2008, 2009. don't know if Miles Reiner's in the room, but he predicted that the ACA Greater 3 rule would be a disaster because the insurance companies were giving it out to be allowed to use their in-network rates or what they usually pay for out-of-network rates. And he knew that unless we had some other arbitration, that there would be a downward spiral like we saw with the Ingenix and United Healthcare scandal. So, as you've been reading in the paper a lot these days, surprise bills, right? Who's here the director and has to answer these bills? All these people are working like crazy to eliminate your ability to do that. And when you lose the ability to balance bill or pay out a network, what do you lose? Negotiation stance. So we're working very hard. This report came out by AHIP just this year, and it's specious. You can see an emergency department visit there in the middle. It says $12,000. They found the highest out-of-network charge they could find for all these different procedures, and they published it in this booklet. So we're going to have a big effort on our hands to reverse this kind of propaganda slamming you for what you do. Because the next thing it leads to is prohibition. Prohibition didn't work out in the 20s, did it? Okay, well, we could kind of create an analogy there. Sometimes big government's not a good thing. Robert Wood Johnson, nonprofit, also published a study to look at the effective out-of-network and balanced billing statutes in all the different states. You should pull this report if you're interested in this area. And finally, we have been on this for several years. We had 9 visits with CISAIO, the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight. And we told them, something's bad here. Something smells in Denmark, as they say. We found evidence that $150 million from one carrier alone was being diverted not back to you as a provider or to the patient to pay their bills, but back into the coffers of the insurance company by using out-of-network balanced billing denials. We asked them to investigate. They took 9 months to do a report, and they buried it. We finally got it released, and it shows that we have a case to say we're not being treated fairly, and they're creating the case that if we allow a greater of 4, where you can use an outside database like Fair Health, it may cause an upward spiral. We're in the midst of that battle right now. We're asking for more guidance, and the board is going to wrestle with this issue in executive session on Thursday, where our next tact is going to be, now that we have that report from IMPACT, and it didn't do what we needed to do. Regarding fair reimbursement, I want to let you know that because it's such a huge issue that we need to have be treated fairly, our colleague, EDPMA, Emergency Department Practice Management Association, and ASAP have created a joint task force on out-of-network and balanced billing. Because Medicaid rates are so inadequate and don't reflect at all the cost of health care and are limiting access for our patients, we created a joint task force with EDPMA, our colleagues on Medicaid access. And they're going to be convening Monday here at ASAP. And we have other allies, AMA. AMA convened a meeting with Dean Wilkerson and only a couple other specialty societies only a week ago to discuss this exact issue. Now, I don't know if Steve Stack had anything to do with it, but the executive director did call our Dean Wilkerson, who flew to Chicago to meet with a couple other specialties, so stay tuned. ASAP is represented on the Physician Advisory Group for Fair Health. Now, I know there's pockets in the GeoZips, and that's a complicated term to say that it's not a robust database. Even with 20 billion charges in there, we're still getting a pretty good picture of what fair and usual customary rates may be. And Fair Health now is starting to talk, instead of usual customary rates, usual and customary costs. Because I'm sure as Jay will talk about, and you're going to hear a lot more, it's about transparency and it's about costs. And only with robust databases are we going to be able to get those numbers. Finally, with the reimbursement issue, we know that alternative payment methodologies are coming. Don't read the slide, it's just to show you that it's a very complicated issue, and I can tell you that we're going to be in the middle. At the AMA meeting recently, the RUC, there was a specialist brought in, the world's authority on alternative payment models, and out of 7 subgroups they had, ASAP was invited to attend 4. So they're starting to get the idea that when people access the system, we're going to be responsible for a lot of maybe expense or care, and we could be held accountable. But that's okay. As long as we have the responsibility and accountability and we can actually intervene, then that's fine. Abraham Lincoln wrote, the best thing about the future is that it comes only one day at a time. But I'll tell you what, in our ASAP timeline, our days are very long because we get so much done, both in clinical practice but also on behalf of your college. It's kind of interesting that we're here in Boston. This is 30 years after October 21st, 2015. That's the date from the movie. I don't know if you all realize that from Back to the Future. So it's kind of fun to talk about the future and where we're heading real quickly. We're in a world now that we have been the innovators and we're going to continue to do so. We were the early adopters of EMR, the first adopters, largest specialty to adopt EMR by far 10 years ago, and meaningful use, but we're not being measured for meaningful use, but the hospitals are relying on our systems. We are leaders in data aggregation and interpretation, huge data files on what we do. We're the first specialties to use scribes to get us away from the keyboard and you have these hands do what they're meant to do, which is touch patients. We created the first specialty emergency department registry. It's going live. We just, like I said, decided we're going to move ahead with an emergency visit registry. Never seen before. It's an exciting time. These are going to be tools that are going to change how we're viewed and, once again, our value. The TCPI initiative, that large grant I mentioned, that's going to be another model. I think CMMI is going to go crazy when they find out we have all two different registries that we're dumping data into. Transparency and pricing is going to help us, and it's going to hurt the hospitals, but they are our partners. We're going to have to figure out a way to make this work, that they have to come up with code modifiers to not charge $1,000 for an ankle sprain. Alternative payment methodologies, stay tuned. The cases are starting to come through, the models of how this may work. I'm excited about that because of the people we have assigned to those groups. And one other thing, people are talking about, you know, if you were at the town hall, Ricardo Martinez talked about hospitals, you know, noticing decreasing profits and operating margins, increased uninsured even despite the ACA, stuff we know. But I also told the reporter from Bloomberg News yesterday, my goodness, insurance in an exchange doesn't mean you have insurance. You have a $3,000 deductible or $2,000. They don't have $700 in their bank account. So it's really like no insurance. I'd like to see a deductible waived and have a copay for emergency care. Instead of it being applied against a deductible, which means no pay, make it a 20% copay or something to account for the fact that when you get struck by a truck or you have an MI or you have an accident, you shouldn't lose your bank account. So stay tuned for more on that. We have the registry. We're going to have this emergency visit reporting system. You see all the forces coming together? So stay tuned. We're going to need your involvement. We're going to need a lot of help. And this is a friend of mine, Rick Renaud's schematic of where the world exists right now. $2.8 trillion spent in healthcare, $3 billion this year probably. $14 billion at the bottom goes to emergency physicians. We're at the end of the spigot. You've got to go through insurance companies. You've got to have sometimes negotiations with your hospitals. Other physicians seem to be higher on the food chain. No more. This is our sweet spot. Dealing directly with CMS and third parties and payers and employers, going directly to large employers and saying, we're the value. You deal with us, and we'll tell you how to provide cost-effective health care. Now let's do a little bit of celebrating. A lot of good things happened this year. Mr. Speaker? Fantastic job on this ASAP Now. I think everybody would agree that we love this. We have to celebrate all we've accomplished. I had the privilege of Chris Good on my right in that picture. And Mark Socher from Virginia gave a plaque. We went to their 40th anniversary just a week and a half ago. What a great thing to do to get together with our chapters and see old friends, because you never know who's going to show up, you know? Look at this rogues gallery. But anyway, it was good to see all these folks out in West Virginia. You just met the first emergency physician again of the AMA. An incredibly proud moment. And we were at the inauguration on the dais. It was an unbelievable experience, one I'll remember my entire life. Congratulations, Steve. And I'm a proud AMA member as well. And the emergency physician is a president of the AOA as well. I bet some of you didn't know that. I just met John a couple of weeks ago. Think about it. The two large medical societies in the country are both being led by emergency physicians. 2015. It's a great year. We're not meeting in the hotel, correct? We need it, as they said, as Peter Benchley's book, Jaws, he said, we need a bigger boat. So what are we going to do? We built our building back in 1982. You may recognize some of the people in that picture. Leonard Riggs, second from the right, and Brooks Bach, far right. Anyway, that was the groundbreaking in 1982. We used that shovel for the groundbreaking for our new building. And just so you know, if anybody wants to buy a building, ASAP headquarters is for sale. Jim Thompson, I think Rita's been, that was buried there, has been pulled out. There was a blender that was used at sit-in meetings that's no longer there. But we've outgrown our headquarters. It's outdated. We looked at renovating it. It's not practical. It's cheaper in the long term because of our mission. to build a new building, and that's what we're going to do. This is the schematic. I'll never forget this meeting with one of my board members, Deborah Perino. We were both looking at her. The walls were square against the road. I said, whoa, whoa. They've got to see this going to the airport. This is the road just north of Dallas Fort Worth Airport, DFW. He said, we want people to see our logo going and coming. And so they tilted the walls out, so we have to see it. You drive by it. You'll see the blue ASAP logo right there on the wall. We were down there in April for the groundbreaking. It was a lot of fun. They let me drive the truck, which I thought was really cool. I've always loved trucks. They didn't actually let me drive it, but they wouldn't trust me with it. But this is a schematic, very exciting time. You heard about the Pave the Way campaign. Buy a brick, memorialize your commitment to the college with a brick. Why not? So, the last thing I want to say is, happiness lies in the joy of achievement and the thrill of creative effort. If you look at any successful enterprise, it starts with why. And then it's going to be who's going to do it. And then it's how are they going to do it. I could tell you, since our inception over 48 years ago, we are emergency physicians because we know why we do it. It's the most rewarding specialty I could ever imagine. We intervene and change so many people's lives. The who, we know who that is now, too. We're done with those battles. We are an established specialty, and in my travels this year, there's not a door that didn't open, and people did not know who ASAP was, and they weren't familiar with what our mission is and how much they had respect. Now, they couldn't solve all our problems right now, but I could tell you, the why is taken care of, the who is taken care of, now it's the how. And between the CEDAR and the registries and the committees and the task forces, we got the what and the how taken care of. So thank you very much. The excitement continues for our specialty. You're going to meet your president tomorrow. You're going to hear from Jay. But I just want to thank you again. It's been a wonderful year. I can't tell you how bright and how wonderful it is to work with people like you. Thank you very much.